feels way out of proportion anyway.
I was the Army.
Okay, hit the gavel.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good afternoon. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Healthcare Committee to order. Representative Greenlick is doing fine, we are told, but he is not here this afternoon. I think he's at the hospital. He's having a bout of some health thing, but we're told it's not that serious, even though he's not here to chair. So I'm going to do the best I can fill in for him. I believe we have the last CCO that we're hearing from up today, and that's Phil Greenhill from Western Oregon Health Advanced Health. Okay, oh, sorry. See, I'm already not doing this right.
No, you're fine.
Okay, so I'd like to open... Do I have to bang the gavel when I do that? Okay. All right. So I'd like to open a hearing on information, an informational meeting on coordinated care organizations. If Mr. Phil Greenhill would please come forward. And sir, even though I've said your name twice now, when you get up, introduce yourself for the record.
Okay.
Good afternoon to the committee, Vice Chair. My name is Phil Greenhill. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Western Oregon Advanced Health. And we serve Coos and Curry County, formerly known as DOCS and Southwest Oregon IPA and a number of other things. Thank you. I stepped out of the car from Coos Bay about 2 minutes ago. Thank goodness that some of our finer state troopers are not on I-5 today. Not for the record. First,
on the record, okay.
You are on the record.
It's all right. We'll be in solidarity.
Not a judiciary. That's all right.
Be careful on your drive home.
First, my appreciation to Sandy and the chair. I know the chair's been inconvenienced and not here today, but I'd like to thank you for changing the schedule. I had a little granddaughter visiting from Florida, and Sandy was nice enough to rearrange a calendar so I could spend some time with her. I understand that we may be last, but isn't there one more next week? One more CCO to go? We're it, huh? We're the final show? Then I think I'm followed by the director.
Yes.
Oh, Ryan, man. How
are
you doing?
Good afternoon.
So we're drawing a crowd here behind us. I'm going to move rather quickly. You've seen a lot of CCOs. You've heard a lot of presentations and everything. We have a few unique characteristics to our CCO. One, we are significantly geographically isolated, as you well know, on the south coast of Oregon, which gives us some challenges because we're really 2 hours from anywhere. And so you'll see that in some of our developments and some of our program initiatives as to how we've addressed those challenges and how we've come to bring our organization together over the last few years. In the front of your cover, you will see an insertion that wasn't in the presentation. It is a letter. It is the announcement out of Oregon Health Authority yesterday to the CCOs on their completion and placement and success in the second year of our quality incentive measures. For the second year in a row, our CCO, WOE that we refer to it as, accomplish 100% completion of the payment. And we're going to talk a little bit about those incentives in just a moment. While 100% is great, we made it by the skin of our nose due to some data elements in submission. So, well, turning the first couple of pages, you will see a map of Coos and Curry County, the geographical area we cover. Again, a pretty significant isolated area of the state. On the next page over, you'll see a list of our board members, which complies with House Bill 3650 that originally established the CCOs, and a wide attendance and representation from our community from all different service areas and the public sector. The next page down, you'll see what is first a different characteristic of our CCO. We may be analogous to maybe one other CCO here in Salem, but when we originally established the CCO, my challenge and charge from what was then a managed care organization, Southwestern Oregon IPA, and as we were known fondly as DOCS, the challenge that I was given was to develop a community asset that We had been a wholly owned subsidiary or a wholly owned company managed by eight physicians. I came here 4 years ago to 4.5 years ago now to work for eight physicians and a little bitty IPA, and with plans to fish 2 to 3 days a week. 2 weeks later, I came up here, and some fellow by the name of John Kitzhaber started talking about CCOs, and the world changed overnight. So one of the challenges that we were given was to develop an organization that would be a community asset, represent the stakeholders in the community. So we went about that organization. We started with meetings at 6 a.m. in the morning, sometimes two times a week, with even two surgeons in attendance. It grew from six people meeting to 27 people meeting over the spring and the early part of 2012. It seems like yesterday, if we look back, that as much water that's gone under the bridge. And what came out of that was the ownership that you see in front of us, which was nine equity partners forming the organization. Originally, the IPA put up the equity to start this CCO, and then we divested of it. And if you turn, if you're not been, haven't been confused yet about how a CCO is organized, turn the next page to this. And if this doesn't confuse you as the last presenter, nothing will. But it is a representation of our unit holders, analogous to what would be a public stockholder in a public held company. This is a private held company. It does have major delegated contractors in the form of dental, two mental health providers, that's Curry County and Coos County, and it does have Southwest Oregon IPA handling the risk for a physical health entity and also acting as the third-party administrator for WOE and for SWAPA. All of those entities, of course, do have providers of health care services. Some of those are contracted on fee-for-service. Some are a delegated entity. Let me explain our delegation model. We are a fully capitated model, meaning that our four delegated entities up there, Advantage Dental, the Southwest Oregon IPA, Curry County Community, Curry Community Health, which is the public health mental health entity for Curry County, and Coos Health and Wellness, which used to be Coos Public Health and Mental Health, now known as Coos Public Coos Health and Wellness as of last month. So if I've not completely confused you at that point, we'll move forward. So we have two advisory, community advisory committees, one in Coos County. I think there's 17 members on that group, and then the next advisory group is located in Curry County. That's basically our structure. It is a community-owned asset. And again, I emphasize the nine equity partners that own part of this CCO. They are also represented on the board of directors and a number of other committees that function. I'll not go into great depth to some attachments that come up next, the written documents there, but they are, and I will email those to the board because to this committee, I do see that they didn't come out quite well enough to read. That's a description of what's called Patient Relations Management System, PRM Analytics, that we developed with our transformation grant dollars over the last 2 years with Milliman, which is an actuarial group that most people will recognize the name of. This is a risk stratification population management tool that we now have available to any CCO or any other entity that would like to work with Milliman on that. But basically, it is a population management tool that we have developed in association with Milliman. We are licensed to use that. We are the first Medicaid program to really stand this program up. There are about six other ACOs nationwide dealing in the Medicare line of business that are also using it, and there's about 2 million lives that are managed on it. It gives us a wealth of information when it comes to actually managing a population. You can bring this system up. You can bring Phil Greenhill up. It'll look at Phil Greenhill. It'll say Phil Greenhill has a probability of a hospital admission of 75% in the next 6 months. He has a probability of being in the ER of 65%. Here are the prevailing diagnoses that are driving that predictive model. It'll tell you what cost I am. It'll aggregate me with same age and sex populations. It'll compare me to other clinic standards. It'll take a look at my provider and tell me, is my provider more expensive than other providers in our network? If you go through here and look at a, up in the right-hand corner, and it is based on a model
page
that...
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Are you on page 19? Is that where you're showing us?
I'm on page... Right now, I'm on this
article.
Page.
Okay.
I don't know if this is work. Okay?
Yes.
I'm behind
that
the narrative.
Right. Thank you. Right.
Okay. Okay. And the model is basically built on this premise. Actually, with the realization for the last 40 years, I've probably been doing the wrong thing in this business because we always focused on what was the most expensive patient. And we looked out there. In fact, we had a grant about 4 years ago from Regents that told us, identify the top 10% of your most costly patients and go forth and case manage those patients. Well, when we separated those patients out, physicians looked at them and said, well, Phil had a hip replacement last year. He's not going to have a second hip replacement this year. Okay, so in the past, everything we kind of did was actually focused on what was the most expensive patient. Our model today is looking at what are the avoidable costs that you can achieve. If you take an ESRD patient that's on dialysis, if they're going to cost you $80,000 a year, that's a fixed cost. You're not going to cure the kidney condition, and you're not going to reverse the ESRD. Okay, that's true with some of our oncology patients, some of our heart patients, a number of different chronic conditions. So we're looking at if a patient is predicted to spend $60,000, is 15 or 20 of that going to be in an ER, and can we intervene and reverse that noted as avoidable cost? So the whole risk stratification model is worked into an algorithm to give us that information and that data up front. It's a different way of looking at things, and it is getting out of the box, and it's getting away from probably the way we've done business for four or five decades. Okay, so when you see the avoidable cost here, it might be that someone would cost us $58,000, but when we look at ranking that person, we know that there's 3,000 or 4,000 there that if we do the right case management, population management of that individual, we can reverse those dollars and save those dollars. And we're seeing that in our cost trends when we look at another graph there that shows some of our adolescent costs, which in this case is running $141 PMPM, a little bit over what our probably average rate would be. We can take a look at this confusing chart in front of you. That looks very busy. That particular chart will tell you up in the right-hand corner that the average risk right now, we'd be looking at Waterfall Community Health Center, which is one of our FQHCs. And in that case, our average PMPM for the 3,000 patients we have placed with that clinic is running us $476. We can peel that onion back and get down to the actual individual provider and look, is one provider, say, using more specialty services, more ER services, or different services than other providers, and start comparing benchmarks and cost factors to the provision of those services. We can also slice and dice that data around risk score buckets, taking a look at do we have high risk score patients placed maybe with mid-levels versus family practice versus internal medicine on a primary care level. So fast-forwarding, you'll see a couple of other clinics that are represented there. Coast Community, another FQHC, running $336. So we have over $100 variance on a per-member per-month cost with those particular clinics. We can now go into those clinics and find out what is one clinic doing different than another clinic. Okay. Moving forward, I'm going to move real quickly into the partnerships in our community and with some focus around our mental health and behavioral health and dental delivery system. You've heard a lot from a number of CCOs about how bad things are working in the dental community. Well, we don't share that view. We were the first CCO in the state to sign a contract with Advantage Dental in July of 2012. We weren't certified to August of 2012. We had a contract in place with, I know you find it impossible, but Mike Shercliffe actually came to the table with us in July of 2012. We inked that contract before the start of certification in August of 2012. And we have since then built three new clinics in our service area, one in Brookings, one in Gold Beach, a new one in Coos Bay, and we've improved access. We've included them. They are at Equity. They have skin in the game. They have ownership of our CCO. I think that's one of the major differences. They have a value place, and so you'll see through here some of the things we've done with Healthy Smiles and Healthy Children and some of our programs. Basically, our partnerships, you can see a list of them there. One of the things we've done on the very bottom of that page is looking at our WOE pharmacists working with the mental health, psychiatric, mid-level delivery providers. We've waited for a long time to have the 7-Eleven drugs brought into the state formulary and brought into the CCO global budgets. We all know we've been unsuccessful. We were unsuccessful this session in moving legislation that would have made that happen. We've been kind of tired of waiting on that, so we're formulating our own psychiatric formulary. We're working with our pharmacists in the psychiatric mid-levels at mental health, our local psychiatrists. We're one of the few areas of the state that we've been very successful in recruiting a child and adolescent psychiatrist to our area. We have maybe four or five of those, a handful of them in the state, and we actually have one parked in Coos Bay. Now, if we can find a Nordstrom's for the family to shop at, we might actually be able to keep them. So some of our partnerships, if you move forward, are our collaboration with public health and dental health. I guess we're fortunate because we do have an individual by the name of Dr. Dane Smith. He is a retired oral surgeon. Some of you may have had the opportunity at one time to meet Dane. He's a unique individual. Over the last 2 years, he has volunteered and administered over 3,000 dental exams on a volunteer basis in our elementary and our high school. Each year, we're measuring the high school graduation class on a number of those individual seniors that graduate cavity-free. Every year, it ratchets up about 5 or 10%. So we know that our intervention in the elementary school ages in grades, say, 3, 4, and 5, if we can get those kids there and intervene with them, get them into dental care, that we can actually graduate those kids cavity-free. Okay? So I know I wasn't that fortunate. Okay. So looking at some of our...
Did you have fluoride in your water?
I'm sorry?
So did you have fluoride in your water?
I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. We had well water. And sometimes it did go dry in August. If you look at some of our community-wide collaborative problem solving, you'll see kind of a list of programs that we tend to do everything in our community based on a collaborative model. So when we come together to look at an issue, whether it be dental care, provision of mental health care for children, the first question we ask is, do we have the right collaborative together? Who's missing at the table? Who needs to be involved in this conversation? And what would it take to solve these problems? And what skill, what task or tools do we not have at the table? So I'm going to go through this real fast, but if you'll jump over a couple of our programs I'm going to talk about, here's one called the Fearsome Clinic.
What page are you on?
My page is not numbered.
Way bottom in your shadow.
Fearsome Clinic.
I'm a...
The top of the
there is no
shadow.
Page number on his. Okay.
Give me one. Josh,
okay, it's page 28 on mine.
Right, it's at the top.
Fearsome Clinic.
Fearsome Clinic is, I'd like to say this was a CCO initiative, but it wasn't. It was an initiative by Dr. Carla McKelvey. Many of you may know Carla. She serves on the Oregon Health Policy Board, a representative for us out of the South. We took a look at DHS, and there's a state requirement that if a foster family takes in a foster child, there's three provisions of services that have to be done within the first 30 days of having that child in your care. You know, one is a physical visit, pediatric specialist visit, one is dental care, and one is a psychological assessment. Okay, what we found is many kids were falling outside that 30 days. We weren't meeting those goals. It is a standard we have with the CCOs now. So we went to our FQHC, set up the Fearsome Clinic, and now we have all of those providers in one place. You bring the foster parent to foster child. You get all those services at one time in a wraparound service, and it's done wonders to get that foster family off to a good start. Through that assessment, we can also define the other support systems and tools that family may need to be successful with that particular foster child. Next, the Pediatric Crisis Response Project is a is a project that we have underway because, again, in our isolation, we do have an adult psychiatric inpatient unit at Bay Area Hospital. We're fortunate to have that in our community. There's not many psychiatric inpatient units in our state, as we all know. But we have a real absence of support for adolescents. So our adolescents show up in a crisis in the ER, either from Coos or Curry County, and we end up having to put them on a one-on-one, convert a bed in the hospital, go to great expense and great staffing and great risk to be able to manage that patient. So we've put together a crisis response project team that will be a 24/7 response team that can actually go into the ER, go into the family, go into the police station, and work with that family and that child. We have more to come on that. Kairos has been a major component of that program with Bob Lieberman and his staff. Next, page 30, shared staffing for high risk. We combine our case managers now. They're not always physically, but now they're virtually tied together. They may actually physically within the next year share some space. We have actually purchased a piece of property, 5 acres next to ORCA, which is our community action organization, and we will break ground in July on 4 buildings on that property. One will be a new building for WO to operate out of. We're now located in 3 buildings. One will be a replacement facility for what is a 50-year-old building housing public health and mental health, health and wellness in Coos County. That'll be a 20,000-square-foot building. There'll be a building for Kairos, our child mental health services, and there'll be another building that we will probably open a third dental clinic in Coos County. So we're excited about that. That is about a $7 million project funded by the IPA. We have two behavioral health therapists out of mental health that are stationed in our child welfare office. We have 5 counselors in our school districts. We have public mental health and our dental program, Advantage Dental, working with our WIC program and providing dental screenings and sealants. This is probably one of the most successful child dental programs in the state. We're very proud of the efforts, and we're really proud that Advantage Dental has stepped up to provide those services. We share the expenses for that dental program for all children, regardless of their insurance coverage, for between Coos Health and Wellness and Advantage Dental. I'd like to flip forward to page 37 there real quick. We measure our penetration model rates for Coos County, and we compare those to the state average. For children's services, that means that we're seeing 9.5% of the children in the county, and the state average is 7.1. And we're just a little behind the adult penetration average at 13.5. We're at 12.8% on our on that. The next, though, our rate for state hall.
I'm sorry, Mr. Greenhill. One of my members of the committee wants to ask you a question.
Mr. Fillinger, would you describe the definition of penetration rates for Coos County? The penetration rates and percentage, 9.5 and 12.8, would you describe what that means?
In this case, that means in our county, if we have about 12,000 kids, which we do, is about our adolescent or our under 18 age bracket, we are actually physically touching, or not physically, we're touching with services about 9.5% of those kids on an annualized basis.
Yeah, because I'd like to let you know.
Some would need more intensive services than others. You know, some may be a one-time intervention. Some might be an institutional placement.
And that's of the general population?
Yes.
And what percentage of that population is under your CCO?
We have about 50% of the kids in our county are on our plan. We manage overall close to 30% of the county population.
So if we boil that down, of your CCO, you're providing about
20 over 6,000 kids that we're providing services to.
But only about 20% of them?
Would be receiving mental health services.
Okay.
This is just on mental health.
Okay.
So, Mr. Greenhill, I think the committee is really enjoying your presentation. I know I am. But we have to be done by 2, And I don't think we've heard about, I'm wondering if I can ask you to speed up to the measures that you were having trouble meeting or how you were doing.
Okay.
This is very interesting to me, though, so I apologize.
I'll point one quick thing before moving to the measures. That is that we run about one hospital day per day, one patient a day in state hospitals. We're targeted to supposedly have about 2.5 people in the state hospitals, okay? So the person who's following me, if you could get them to give me more money because I'm saving the money.
Okay, well, she's right behind you.
I won't look over my shoulder. However, and I want to point out.
I wondered why she had her fingers in her ear.
Oh, okay. She wasn't listening to that? Okay.
No, she wasn't.
She's smiling.
Government selective
here. It was a nice move.
I want to point out the way we do that is we've got 31 beds that are transitional beds in our community that we fund. And they are respite beds, they are crisis beds, and then they are longer 18-month beds. And I think the more we can develop those type of programs locally with our communities, I think we can see less state hospital utilization. But the problem in a resolution, it rests at the local level. So, well, there's no surprise on where we've had problems with our measures. They are depression screening with documented follow-up plans. They are adolescent well care visits. And they are follow-up after hospitalization for mental health.
All the same ones that everybody else
Amazing,
has struggled
with. Isn't it? And quite frankly, a couple of these have to do with the creation of those measures, the data pools that we're doing for them. I think we missed our adolescent well care visit for 2014. By one person.
Wow.
Okay. So when you drill the data, it's interesting what you find in there. In all full disclosure, I served on the beginning of that committee, so I'm one of the guilty in designing these measures, but you can also blame Bob Dannenhofer for that. So we are, but many of us worked on that committee. This was one of the most exciting committees I think we worked on, but I'm not so sure that. You know, we were trying to design a horse, and we may have got a hybrid camel when it comes to certain of the measures. So you will see there is an action plan in here on how we need to address those. And on the last page is probably the motto that I run our organization on, and Thomas Edison said it, vision without execution is a hallucination. Okay? So when we visualize
vision.
I'm sorry?
I was going to say execution without vision would also be a problem.
It would also be a problem.
There's a lot of that here.
So any questions I can answer? That's a rather quick.
Very quickly. How about we take 5 minutes? Does the committee have any questions? You already got a chance. Let's see if anybody else has one before you get another. Okay, Representative Lively and Representative Kenny Geyer.
So my question, you talked several times, you talked about the facilities being built, the new ones.
Yes.
So I'm trying to understand, so ultimately in your model, who owns those? Does the CCO own them, or do individual partners then own those facilities? Or
in this case, individual partners will own the buildings, yes. In the case of the county, we may build that building and lease it to them until they're in a position to do that. Mm-hmm. But they have, over the last couple of years, put together a $2 million building fund. Oh. So,
okay. Representative Ken Geyer.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask a question that he might have asked if you had given him a chance, Mr. Chair. We've worked a lot on dental projects this session, so I'm delighted to have the good representative join us on this committee. And also delighted that Dr. Shercliffe is working with you. Do you know what your target rate is for pregnant women to get into an initial screening or dental exam?
What our target would be?
Yeah.
Or what we actually accomplish?
Both, actually, would be really helpful.
I don't know the latter part of that. The target is that they would get in within 30 days of a requested appointment.
Okay, if you could get back to me later with some information about what you're actually able to do. I just want to put a quick comment. I'm delighted that you built those new dental clinics and that you're working with the Ready to Smile program. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have gone into the program design on that, but I know there's a lot of thought about trying to get the fluoride varnish, which I'm delighted to see highlighted here, into the kindergartners since they can't do the dental sealants until the first molars erupt. And the earlier we can start that, the better. But I'm really excited by the progress you're making in the dental arena.
And one of the things we want to try to do there is see if some provision dental services don't necessarily always have to be done in an Advantage Dental office. We actually have some of our pediatricians starting to do sealants, and we're encouraging that. We're going to pay for that. And we're going to encourage that we can, you know, expand that program.
Right. Great. So.
All right, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Noce.
I like hearing that.
I like this.
There has been some confusion, resistance, whatever, with the integration of oral health into the CCO about whether the CCO should have a member on the governance board. There's been several bills that have run through this building. There's been quite a bit of discussion with the OHA. What is different about your CCO that it appears that you kind of open arms, be a partner with us in the DCO, oral health, CCO world? What is different about your organization or your approach from most of the other organizations that resist the inclusion in the governance board?
Well, skin in the game. And, you know, they've got an investment in the original structure. They were there from day one. They own a piece of the action. They're responsible for helping it be successful. If it is successful, they have financial awards, you know, in the pipeline for that success. It's not all based on money. And I think we're a small community. If you're not a player in our community, if you end up not being a nice person in our community, you really end up being ostracized. And that's true in our healthcare community. We have to work together. We don't have a choice. We all live in a very small pond, and if we're not cooperative and we don't have that patient first, I run an organization on three basic principles. It's the patient, do what's right, and think. And we challenge everybody that comes to the table with us to consider those three values. And there isn't a 10-page mission statement. There's three basic premises that we work on. And I think some of it was sitting down with Dane Smith and Mike Shercliffe from the very beginning and saying, this is what we want. This is what we want to try to accomplish. We have one of their dentists is on our clinical advisory panel. The psychiatric mid-level from mental health is on our clinical advisory panel. We have an interagency quality committee that they serve on. So it's all of the entities working on the same quality committee with the same goal. So I think it's some of those things. But I think most of all, if you ask Mike, Mike has gone to some other CCOs I know and said, you know, like the one up the road, we'd like to buy a piece of the action, and has been told no. Okay, I can't make a decision for how they do their business model. I can only run my ship. So I think that's probably it in a nutshell.
So you've found the inclusion of the oral health piece to be a positive?
Well, it's extraordinarily positive. I mean, you know, it's you know, one of the things we've installed is an 800 line. We had 9% of all of our ER visits being dental visits. Okay, so we set up an 800 line with Advantage Dental. I think they've now taken it statewide. It's not limited to OHP. Anyone can call that. So a dental crisis shows up to the ER. A lot of times that's drug seeking. We call that 800 line. They have an appointment for them at 7:30 the next morning.
Thank you.
So it's problem solving.
All right. Are there any last questions? Because I do want to get the director out. And I know that ours have a caucus on too.
I wouldn't want to hold up to the director. Even though she owes me money, I wouldn't.
Okay. Well, Mr. Greenhill, thank you very much
thank
for coming
much.
Before us today. It was a very interesting presentation.
Thank you for supporting this. You know, this social experiment is really working. I don't know that 4 years ago we thought that was possible, but it's working.
If nothing else, we're hearing a lot about how all of you, broadly defined, are being forced to collaborate with each other, and even if this doesn't work or it goes away, that is going to continue to happen, and all the communication has changed about how patient care, because people are talking to each other they didn't used to.
I think the only thing I'd end with and add to that is that we haven't been forced. We collectively agreed and came together. And, yeah, have there been some differences? Sure. But have there been more victories? Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay. Right on.
Thank you.
Next up, Lynn Saxton, Director of Oregon Health Authority. You're going to sum all this up for us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Great. I heard that.
OK, Good afternoon, Representatives Noss and Hayden, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Saxton. I'm Director of the Oregon Health Authority, and I was asked by Representative Greenlich to be the closing act or the caboose for his very thorough and appreciated discussions of how we're doing with Oregon's health system transformation. I want to report today that because of the exceptional work that the coordinated care organizations have done, we are advancing the triple aim for Oregonians in Oregon. The CCOs serve about 1.1 million Oregonians on the Medicaid system, as I looked at those numbers this morning. And I think it's important to point out that Oregon is currently the focal point of many states in the country who are looking at Oregon's success in bending the cost curve and how that can be sustained and enhanced as we go forward into what I like to call health system transformation 2.0. In the 15-17 biennium, healthcare system transformation has produced $824 million in savings for the state of Oregon, and we are currently projecting savings of $1.2 billion in the 17-19 biennium. Many of you have sat with me and my team and looked at our six-year projections for Oregon's health system transformation. If you haven't done that yet, I'm happy to schedule those appointments with you to look at our projections. They're conservative projections, but we're proud of them. We have done this through a collaboration and a partnership with the CCOs, which I think you've had an excellent series of presentations on, and I'm going to work hard not to duplicate that effort. I want to underscore that as we go forward in Health System Transformation 2.0, one of the opportunities we have is to expand our collaborations with CCOs and the public health departments around the state to foster well-being for all Oregonians. So I'll take you through these slides quickly. I just realized late in life that I'm very much a visual learner, and so I wanted to give you a map of the CCOs in Oregon. I'm not going to take you through all the elements of that, but there is what we look like today. And we have copies of that if you would like it to be sent to your offices. I also want to share the enrollment by CCO. This is how many enrollees we have in each of the CCOs in Oregon today. In some parts of the state, we have multiple CCOs. In other parts of the state, we do not. I'd like to flip forward to page 4, which shows the total margin percentages for the CCOs after income taxes. And again, I'm mostly going by these quickly because I want to get to your questions and I want to make some specific points. The subsequent slide on page 5 is the CCO net assets. I'd like to highlight some CCO successes, but before I do that, in my fifth month in this position, I'd like to particularly point out some progress we have made in our relationship with the CCOs in Oregon. First, we have improved our collaboration to include, when we're recruiting key leadership positions at the Oregon Health Authority, we engage, in addition to the several hundred community stakeholders we have, we also engage the CCOs, most recently in the recruitment of our new chief financial officer, Mark Fairbanks, who you will see if you have not met already and comes to us as both an Oregonian but also with an excellent skill set both financially and in accounting and regulatory processes. We are currently in the process of recruiting the chief health systems officer. This is one of the key elements of the restructure of the Oregon Health Authority. It was driven by three things. One is the legislature suggested that we needed to consolidate the department formerly known as DMAP and the Oregon Addictions and Mental Health Division. We have done that effective July 1. But further, we wanted to create a single point of access for CCOs to dramatically improve communication and access to information and business relationships. So the chief health systems officer, who's under recruitment right now, national recruitment, and that will be the single point of access for CCO issues to come through one door, as opposed to the 7 or 8 doors that existed when I started on January 20th. Next, we, as many of you have heard, we've engaged in a rate redevelopment process for the 2015 rates. We did that several months ago. It was a very difficult decision. I want to commend the CCOs for their doubling down and helping us go through a process that involves a lot of work, but actually at the end of the day, I think has improved the relationship of the agency with the CCOs. That process will conclude with 2015 rate redevelopment in mid-July, just in time for us to begin work on the 2016 rate development, which we will engage in September. That's critical work. As we all know, the financial sustainability of this system and the continuing success of this system is dependent on a strong rate foundation. Third, we have worked intensively to improve communication and to have clear, direct, and candid communication with our critical partners, and I think we've made gains there. We're not where I would like to be, but we've made significant gains, including revising our meeting structure to lean it down and make it more effective. Fourth, we have restructured the agency. It's important to note that the agency restructure is to be a functional organization aligned with the new health system that we are overseeing in Oregon. And that restructure, many people have told me the last thing to do is to restructure an agency in the course of the legislative session. We took that on knowing full well it would be very difficult, but the leadership team has risen to the challenge, and I think it will pay direct dividends to our relationship with the CCOs. One of our key requirements has been to become a performance-driven organization, as we expect the CCOs to be performance-driven. As you just heard, it's the metrics that are driving the success for Oregonians on the healthcare level. And I think our team is very excited about moving to being more of a performance-driven organization in the future. A lot of work is underway to accomplish that and ensure our alignment with the CCOs. There have also been key CCO successes. We have made progress on alternative payment methods. We have more to go. We have made progress on flexible services. We have more to go. Health information technology has made significant gains since the startup, and we look forward to cementing those gains. I want to give a shout out to Susan Otter in our team, who is a gifted leader in this area and really is driving a product for the state that we can all be very proud of. We've talked about performance and incentive metrics. Our metrics process with the CCOs and with the Metrics Oversight Committee has been successful. We were just asked to participate in Lori Koiner, who's led that work, has just been asked to present at a national conference where most of the country's leading people trying to build systems like ours will be attending and learning from the Oregon example. We have a lot of work to do there. I want to call out specifically the continual integration of behavioral health metrics and oral health metrics in that process so that we are ensuring the triple aim and the coordinated care model is effective going forward. And those are big, heavy lifts in our future. We're committed to doing it. And finally, the community advisory councils, which have had overall a lot of success. Again, we have some work to be done here to ensure our continuing success. With that, given your timeline, I'd like to hit on a few of the challenges, and then I'll stop talking and answer your questions. Some of the ongoing challenges are continuing to expand and diversify the provider network, sustaining our efforts over the long term. We're very pleased, as I mentioned earlier, to have this 6-year projection. I just want to underscore for the benefit of the committee that it is a tool that we can use to enter assumptions or new proposals and show what it does to the long-term financial sustainability. It's not a report, it's a tool. So we look forward to collaborating with you, with the CCOs, on using the tool to project implications of policymaking as we go forward. It helps us make strategic choices within a financially sustainable framework. We obviously have a lot of work to do to get upstream on the social determinants of health, and I look forward to some. There have been several initiatives in this session, and we look forward to making gains post-session on those efforts. We need to continue to strengthen the consumer voice. It's fascinating to me. I've been on the phone with consumers, specifically in the context of their eligibility challenges. And one of the things I'm very excited about, having spent the last 13 years working with consumers in the indigent and poverty sector, is how we can empower and educate them to use these new resources effectively and efficiently. And I think we as an agency will be looking forward to working with the CCOs to do that. We need to continue to effectively identify and address health disparities. Our agency will be specifically, our Office of Equity and Inclusion, will be specifically looking at partnering with the CCOs to address disparities that we're already seeing in the data and resolving them as quickly as possible. For the real change in the delivery system, this is the jewel in the crown, is payment needs to focus on the outcomes at all levels. And I think our CCO partners are strongly focused on that, as we are. This is a system that is built on the premise that it's not just about getting more services to more people, but it's about integrating those services to the results and outcomes we desire to control the cost growth in healthcare, and that's what we are making tremendous gains on early on, but we have much work to do there. Finally, I want to underscore that we are, I've mentioned the incorporation of the behavioral health work in the physical health world of the CCOs. We have created a mapping tool to help us drive that work with data, and we'll shortly be convening a technical advisory committee to ensure that that work is baked in with the work that we and the system of care that we've developed with such success. And just a gentle reminder to everyone, in case you haven't seen the evening news lately, but there is a presidential election coming up, and of course that will be occurring concurrent with our waiver renewal. And as all of you know, there are a few transitions in any presidential election. So we have extensive work underway right now to ensure not only that we get amendments in proactively to our waiver to sustain our continuing success, but also to we're organizing ourselves around the waiver task, and we look forward to a close working partnership with the CCOs in that effort as well. And finally, we have a big project coming with the CCOs, and they'll be joining us here shortly on our advisory committee. But as you all know, we've been on a march to Kentucky to bring their eligibility system to Oregon and to attach it to our MMIS system. That is a very complex effort. We are watching it closely, and so far we're hitting our benchmarks and we're within our budget. But all of us have a great deal of concern that we do that very well. It will be a process that begins in July and goes through December of 2016. So that will be an intense working project with the CCOs to ensure that we meet as much as possible their claims requirements, their data requirements, et cetera. So in closing, this is a very unique collaboration and partnership. It has many moving parts, but I am pleased to be able to report to you that we have initially passed through Health System Transformation 1.0 with a tremendous amount of success, and we look forward to continuing to solidify those gains with the CCOs in the next phase. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I'm going to let Representative Hayden go first this time.
And then Lively.
I think he went first last time, but that's all right. I'll defer to Representative
but
Hayden.
Who's counting?
Thank you, Chair Noss, and thank you, Mrs. Saxon, for coming and presenting this, and we've talked several times. One of the questions I have with regards to 1.0 transportation with the DRG hospitals, that seems to at least now appear to be successful in moving forward. But the state legislature gave the Oregon Health Authority, before you were in that position, the singular person to decide whether the AMB or the smaller hospital stay on a cost basis or move to a transformation hospital or something in between. Now that you have taken that position, some of these hospitals would like a little more collaboration, or my understanding is like a little more input rather than being told, okay, you now have to go to transformation model, which is a different funding structure versus cost basis model that they're on now. Some of them are about 50% are struggling financially already, so we're looking for ways to shore that up. But my question comes to, in your position, the way that the system was set up prior to you being there, do you see that a single point of contact making that decision as a positive thing, or would you be looking to make that more collaborative for the smaller hospitals to be part of the conversation rather than basically told, okay, this percentage point didn't get hit, so you now have to go to that or that?
So, Vice Chair Hayden, Vice Chair Noss, are you referring to the single point of contact at the Oregon Health Authority? Are you referring to an association of hospitals?
No, I'm referring to the individual hospital. My understanding is that the Oregon Health Authority, outside of a collaboration or outside of a group discussion, decides whether that hospital stays on cost basis or not.
So
basically their structure.
So the short answer is that I'm always available to talk to people, and I'd like to look at that process. I'm not familiar with what was done before in terms of how the relationship was structured, so I'll look at that and see. I've lived part-time in rural Oregon for the last 7 years. I really want to get to a solution that works for rural hospitals and for their clients, because it's a different relationship. So we're happy to convene and open that process up to have that conversation. I'll go back and look at what that looks like and see what I believe in my tenure that we have had several good conversations, not just with you, but with other rural hospitals, and I look forward to continuing those conversations.
Thank you. And my follow-up. We had discussed this before, and I know you're working on it. I just want to see where you're at on the excise tax and how that might affect all of this.
So, Vice Chair Hayden, Vice Chair Noss, the excise tax currently is there. There is a group working at ensuring that will not be an issue, but I'm not current on their progress during the legislative session. So we have it on our dashboard. We know we need to address it, and there are a number of professionals in the Oregon Health Authority doing research, and we will be able to report back on the status of that.
Thank you.
Lively.
Thank you very much. So my question has to do with health information technology. Every time I hear that term, I see lots of dollars and not necessarily achieving where we want to go. But it's mostly around the electronic medical records and the role that OHA plays versus the CCOs, and whether that's still, do we see the movement there, and are we going to get the gains? What I hear from some of my medical professionals in my community, there's still a split opinion about it's worth the effort and the money that we're putting into it for the gain we're going to get out. So I'm just curious of where that is and the role OHA especially plays in that.
So co-chairs Noss and Hayden and Representative Lively, what I am hearing from our team and from external stakeholders who are in the healthcare industry is that, again, the OHIT effort, Susan's work, is both going to be very beneficial, and it has gone really exceptionally well. That being said, just to be frank, the MMIS system that we use and soon to be attached to the Kentucky model is less than perfect. And having used it myself professionally since it was implemented, it is ripe for improvement. We will be convening post-session to look at, and throughout this MAGI process of the Kentucky system being implemented, at what we do with MMIS to continue its improvement. So part of what I would appreciate is we are, as people suggest that they are having challenges, we are very much wanting to hear specifically what those challenges are. So if they just shoot me an email and say, just so you know, this is really, that's how we fixed the eligibility process several months ago, is kind of hearing directly where the barriers were and then targeting resources to solve them. But we do have a significant IT challenge at the state level. I am surprised every day at how significant that challenge is.
Thank you. Any other questions from anybody else on the committee?
Thank you.
Director Saxon, it was nice to have you.
I assume
we'll see you back in the fall.
Yes, thank you.
All right, unless anybody's got an announcement or something else they want to say in parting, I think we can adjourn. Right?
I will make an announcement. Okay. We have a meeting next Wednesday, July 1st. Just as a heads up.
And we look forward to Chair Greenlick being back.
We do. Okay. All right, with that, the healthcare committee is adjourned.
What did you say, Greenlick?
Committee is adjourned.
What did you say, Greenlick?